The following content is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Listening to the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Out in the Garden. For the next half hour, enjoy articles to help you improve your green thumb. And now, here's NCRS volunteer Cindy Fowler.
And we'll start with the Raleigh News and Observer, articles by Nancy Brakey. The first one is, Let These Beauties Bloom in Your Landscape. The two splendid things are happening this week in the Piedmont. Both are flowers, and what a mark they make in the winter landscape. Out first was the Japanese flowering apricot, Prunus moom, a fine medium-sized tree whose white or pink flowers would make you think it was April instead of early February. Second is winter jasmine, Jasminum nudiflorum, a shrub whose yellow flowers on arcing branches are sometimes confused with forsythia. These are two of the most distinctive plants for midwinter bloom. In full flower, they are traffic stoppers because the colors are so beautiful, but they are very different. Japanese flowering apricot gained in popularity in the past decade or so as home gardeners became aware of its very early, very lovely bloom, and size well suited for a small front yard. It also appeals to people who want a four-season landscape. Despite its name, it originated in China, and modern hybrids, most of them with pink flowers, began to be developed in England in the late 1940s. Quite a few named varieties are in the marketplace. It requires sun with moist but well-drained soil and may reach 25 feet over time. Since this is prime time for planting trees and other woody plants, you can see plants in bloom while making your selection. The winter jasmine is one of my favorite plants. This is partly for its reliable bloom in mid to late winter when the cheerful yellow flowers look so spring-like. It is also a pretty plant, with arcing stems that tend to be a bright green. This is a no-nonsense, easy plant that causes no trouble and looks good in a corner where it can reach mature size of 4 or 5 feet tall. It could also be useful to spill over a slope. A sunny location produces the best flowers. Rejuvenation pruning every few years should encourage fresh growth and good flowering. From a distance, it is confused with forsythia. Just remember, winter jasmine blooms early and has green stems. It can certainly be planted and enjoyed now. Next by Nancy Brakey. Solve bare spot problems with ground covers. Some of you are beginning to think about repair to your fescue lawn, but that's a job that should wait until about mid-February. That's when people get busy with fertilizing and fixing bare spots, worn down by feet or disturbed by a home improvement project. But now is an opportunity to get going on another aspect of lawn care, the selection and planting of permanent ground covers that will look good and solve problems. Evergreen ground covers work especially well in areas where fescue grass struggles. Slopes that tend to dry out quickly, the root zone of trees where grass does not compete well for water, and areas too shady for grass to prosper. Many choices exist in the marketplace. Some, such as Mondo grass, will create a smooth, low evergreen look with short, dark green blades. Others, such as hardy ferns like the autumn fern, possess a dynamic look, with new fronds rising in spring and lasting through the winter. Others are the tassel and exquisitely beautiful Japanese painted fern. Even more, such as Linton roses, produce beautiful, long-lasting blooms starting in winter. Those are certainly the leaders of the group, but these are not your only choices. A vigorous evergreen called ajuga makes a wonderful ground cover and bears pretty flowers in spring. It stays pretty flat, and many choices in leaf color are in the marketplace. Some ajugas, such as an old favorite named Burgundy Glow with touches of purple, have interesting color combinations in their foliage. Chocolate Chip has deep bronze-green leaves that at times looks brown and are very different from other ajugas. Another distinctive ground cover is Creeping Jenny, an evergreen that stays quite flat on the ground. The variety Aurea is a bright yellow-green. This is one of the ultimate low-maintenance plants, but will take space and grows vigorously into a mat. The light color looks especially good in shady areas because it stands out nicely, almost as a glow. Nice winter weather is an invitation to get things planted, and ground covers are some of the best choices for midwinter work that will get you ahead when the spring rush starts in a few weeks. And now for Ask Nancy. Question. I have a lot of shrub pruning to do this winter. Is it too early to get started on this? Answer. Not too early. Aim to get this work done by early March. However, do not prune shrubs that will bloom this spring, including azaleas, forsythia, pieris, and camellias. But most hollies and ordinary evergreens, such as ligustrum and clayera, can be pruned this month. Now another question. My African violets stopped blooming and I do not know why. What can I do to get them going again? Answer. African violets will rest for a time after blooming, but they require fertilizer to encourage fresh bloom. Get a liquid fertilizer formulated for African violets and apply it at the timing and strength recommended on the label. I have had no luck in getting African violets to rebloom without the help of this fertilizer. And now from HGTV's Gardens e-newsletter. Unusual houseplants. Instead of a run-of-the-mill houseplant, choose something out of the ordinary. Check out these unusual varieties. Dissicactus remulosa, Bill's Red. The more sun you put this plant in, the more color it shows. The flowers turn into the little white pearls on the edges of the leaves. Hierella odorata. This miniature orchid blooms consistently and often. Placed in a west window with plenty of humidity and a thorough soaking once a week, it is very happy. Fertilize with a weak solution of fertilizer once a month from March through April. Epicia cleopatra. This African violet cousin is grown for its fabulous, colorful foliage. It will flower, but they pale in comparison to the foliage. These plants need very high humidity, and so are best suited to a large terrarium. Hoya multiflora, or shooting star Hoya. This beautiful blooming plant is very easy to grow and flower in a bright window. Keep it evenly moist and let it stay in tight quarters, as Hoyas prefer their roots to be snug in the pot. Pink Cadillac euphorbia, or crown of thorns. This is an almost continual blooming plant if kept in a bright window. Let it dry down between waterings, as this is a succulent plant and it could rot if it is too wet. Pregnant onion. This plant will be a conversation piece in your indoor garden. The long, strappy leaves are nice, but the large bulb with its babies is the interesting part. bright light and moderate water is all that it needs. Bird's Nest Anthurium. This is not the anthurium we are used to with the bright, patent, leather-like flowers. This large plant is grown for its attractive, huge, wavy leaves. Low to medium light with moderately moist soil is all that is necessary to keep this plant happy. Petalanthus tithymaloides, Limezinger, or Devil's Backbone. This West Indies plant has far from usual stems. They are zigzag-shaped, thus the Devil's Backbone name. As this is a succulent plant, it needs to be kept moderately dry and needs to be in full sun to keep its variegation. Baseball Bat Sansevieria. Most people don't realize that there are hundreds of species of Sansevieria. This one has large, thick stems instead of the flat ones we are used to. They prefer to be in very bright light and let them dry out between waterings. And Rabbit's Foot Fern. This fern looks like a top-colored tarantula with fern fronds growing out of it. The fuzzy rhizomes are definitely the attraction of this plant. It needs high humidity and constant moisture. Cleistocactus wintery. This very spiny cactus is not anything exciting until these peach flowers appear. Then the wows start. Put it in as much sun as you can and let it dry down before watering again. Euphorbia francoisii. This caudex-forming succulent has spiky stems and shiny, wavy leaves. It is very slow growing, but the end result is worth the wait. Let it dry down between waterings. Gasteria armstrongii. This thick-leaved succulent is less sun-loving than other succulents, making it perfect for windowsill culture. It is very drought-tolerant, but do not let it dry out completely. Staghorn fern. These epiphytic ferns need high humidity and bright, indirect light, never full sun. Do not let the roots dry out and keep in a warm spot. Quite often, these plants are grown on a slab of wood. Columnia firebird. This South American African violet cousin needs bright, indirect light to bloom prolifically. It is a great candidate for a hanging basket. Keep it slightly pot-bound and pinch the ends regularly to keep it more compact. And here are some great new fruit and vegetable varieties to grow in 2018 by Lynn Coulter. Cherry Tomato Midnight Snack. Midnight Snack cherry-type tomatoes are delicious in salads or popped right into your mouth while you're picking in the garden. In full sun, the red fruits take on a glossy, purplish-black cast that comes from pigments containing healthy antioxidants. You can start harvesting in about 65 to 70 days from transplanting. Midnight Snack is an All-American Selections Award winner. And Hungarian Pepper Mexican Sunrise F1. Looking for a medium-hot pepper? Try Mexican Sunrise. These Hungarian peppers range in color from lime green to yellow, orange, and red as they ripen, so you'll often have a rainbow of hues on the same plant. The thick-walled fruits are good for eating fresh, pickling, or processing, but they're also pretty enough to dress up your garden or use for fall decorations. This variety is another AAS winner with a bushy growth habit that's suitable for containers or small gardens. Pak Choi Asian Delight F1. According to a recent study of food trends, Asian cuisine will continue to be popular this year, with Filipino foods joining Thai, Korean, and Vietnamese dishes on our tables. Asian Delight F1 Pak Choi, or Bok Choi, is a Chinese cabbage that you can chop for Filipino-inspired soups, stews, sauces, and more. This AAS-winning variety forms 5 to 7 inch heads with tender, mild-tasting ribs and dark green leaves. In field trials, other pak choys bolted much earlier than Asian Delight, so you can expect bigger yields than with other varieties. And corn, Sweet American Dream. Sweet American Dream is also an AAS winner. This bicolor corn is ready in 77 days from sowing, and since it was bred to have twice the sugar content of regular corn, the kernels are sweet and tender. Plant it in short blocks for maximum pollination, and sow more seeds every 2 to 3 weeks for a continual harvest. Be sure the soil is consistently warm before you plant. The stalks grow 6 to 7 feet tall. And from the Triangle Gardener website, Fragrance and Flowers in Winter by Kit Flynn. The dream of most Zone 7 gardeners is to have flowers in the garden for 12 months of the year. Somehow these hopes dim during the month of January when the landscape looks bleak under gray skies. However, there are a couple of plants that do produce flowers in January and February and are worth noting. Both Daphne odora and Clematis serosa are two plants that can give much pleasure during these months. The luscious blooms of Daphne odora, coupled with a delicious scent, are enough to enchant us. Best of all, Daphnes are poisonous, so they manage to repel the hungriest deer. A Mediterranean plant, Clematis serosa, can grow in the Piedmont provided it has some protection from the cold winter wind. Freckles, the most common cultivar found in our area with flowers consisting of maroon speckles on a pale background, is hardy to 10 degrees Fahrenheit. The key to growing this plant is not to plant it too deeply. Both the Daphne and Clematis need well-draining soil if they're going to thrive. Because Clematis serosa will go dormant in the summer, it sometimes is paired with summer-blooming Clematis. Prune it right after it has bloomed, and you should have a long-lasting plant that gives you great pleasure for many winters. Alas, there is a downside to Daphne. After delighting us in the garden for 2 to 3 years, tricking us into believing we are the ones who will break the Daphne curse, it begins to wither away. All the experts from Bryce Lane of North Carolina State University to Jason Holmes at the Sarah P. Duke Gardens have assured me that sooner rather than later, Daphne will die. The mantra seems to be, enjoy them today, for tomorrow they will be gone. While no one knows exactly what Daphne wants, we do know there are some things Daphne needs. Daphne wants well-draining soil that retains moisture. Amending our clay soils is a necessity. These plants are not good candidates for a rain garden. Daphne prefers mildly acidic soil, so apply lime if the soil's pH is below 5.5. Don't know your soil's pH? Get a soil test through your county extension office. Add compost to the soil before you plant your Daphne. Not only does this provide good drainage, but it also provides for beneficial bacteria and fungi. Daphne needs some winter protection, so consider planting it next to a stone wall that will absorb some heat from the winter sun. This is one time when it really helps to know your garden's microclimates, because Daphne dislikes being frozen for even a couple of days. Daphne responds to an occasional feeding. All this, I realize, is not very helpful information. Essentially, it boils down to this. 1. Do not overwater your Daphne, but do not underwater it either. 2. Place it in the sun, but beware of full summer sun. 3. Feed it some fertilizer without overfeeding it. 4. Have good, well-draining soil that does not get too dry. And 5. Try to have a pH that is less acidic than most of our acidic soils. There is one last rule. Savor your Daphne while it is in bloom. Admire this handsome evergreen plant, and try not to take it personally when it begins to die. With luck, your Clematis serosa will be around to assure you that you really are a good gardener. This article is Getting in Shape by Susan Jason. A little planning ahead can maximize your enjoyment and minimize headaches when dealing with your landscape, maintenance in particular. A simple concept, but most often overlooked. This particularly applies to the layout and design of your planting beds. What could be so hard? It isn't hard, actually. It's quite easy when given some forethought. For example, a planting bed with square corners. They are easily made with straight-edged materials, but typically they're more time-consuming when it comes to mowing and trimming. Consider the curved garden shape. Curves are often considered more organic or natural, and in a garden border, mowing can be easier, but only if done correctly. Particularly true when using a riding mower. It also makes more work when mowing with a push mower. If the radius of the curve is smaller than the turning radius of your lawnmower, you've created a trimming nightmare that will take a lot of the fun out of mowing. In the case of a riding mower, be aware of the turning radius of your mower. If you're not sure of it, make as tight a circle as you can with the mower and measure the radius. If you have a zero-turn radius mower, you still have maneuvering room to consider. Either case, always design your planting beds so you can mow in a continuous motion without having to stop and start to get into all those tight little turf areas. General rule of thumb is be sure your curves are never tighter than a 6-foot radius. The wider the radius, the more sweeping the curves, the more pleasing design, not to mention easier care. Where your garden edge meets pavement, whether driveway, a sidewalk, or a patio area, the transition can take several forms. The edging simply tees into the hardscape, or the edging curves and seems to disappear into the edge of the hardscape. There are pros and cons to both approaches. The T transition. Pros. The T makes an abrupt, clean edge and makes a strong definition to the planting bed. Con. When mowing, one will have a 90-degree turn to make with this transition. The curved transition. The pro. It makes mowing very easy as one follows the gentle curved edge as it meets the hardscape edge. Con. It makes growing plants in the narrow transition area very difficult. There's no right or wrong, just a difference in style and choice. Keep the radii in mind when mulching trees. Even smaller trees will grow large, so start by giving them some extra room and mulching around them at the same radius as your mower. If the bare mulch area seems too much, plant annuals in the mulched area until the tree grows. With the mulch, you're also protecting the trunk of the tree from lawnmowers or string trimmers that can damage bark and ultimately kill your young tree. Probably one of the most common mistakes made by gardeners is lining the edge of the driveway with plant material. Most driveways are quite narrow. Typically, driveways are 20 feet wide, allowing two vehicles to be parked side by side. However, this does not allow for the 4 to 5 foot space required to open a vehicle door and to step out of the vehicle. Result? Crushed plants. If you're ever tempted to soften the edge of your driveway with a border, be sure that your guests will not be trampling your hard work. If you have an oversized driveway that has extra space for egress from vehicles, be sure to plant your greenery away from the edge of the concrete. Talking about sidewalks, it is best to have, at a minimum, a 54-inch wide sidewalk for the main approach to your home. Most residential walkways are 48 inches wide and can be found as narrow as 36 inches. Two people walking comfortably side by side typically requires 54 inches. Whenever possible, keep the approach to your home grand and reduce the width of the more utilitarian areas if possible. And as you plan for visitors, be sure to avoid narrow turf areas where a mower cannot fit. This makes for more maintenance. Generally, curves are easier to maintain, the broader, more sweeping forms being easiest. Reserve straight lines for those formal gardens where you fully expect to spend extra time on maintenance. Some of the greatest gardeners are built on geometry of angles and lines, so if that's your style, by all means, make the most of it in your... and then enjoy. And now, from the Raleigh News and Observer, Find Surprises in Your Landscape by Nancy Brakey. After a few weeks of cold, gloomy, wet weather when there was little to draw us outdoors, it was fun to go looking for surprises in the landscape this week. They were there, too. Lovely little flowers, such as winter honeysuckle, opened to reveal their lovely scent right on time. Hardy ferns, such as the reliable autumn, looked fresh as a spring day, even though the fronds had emerged many months ago. Plus, there are the surprises. Camellias that hunkered down and kept their buds closed tightly through the coldest weeks are now starting to open again, a joyful sight. I am particularly impressed by the beautiful Lady Clare Camellia, whose first buds opened in early November and continued into December. Some open blooms were lost to the deep freeze, but the buds survived without damage. They began to open a couple of weeks ago, showing no sign they ever endured those very cold nights. I was surprised they held up so well. Perhaps an even bigger surprise is how well most things, including broad-leaved evergreens, stood up to the very cold temperatures. Some browning of the edges of leaves, such as viburnums, appears alarming at first, but should not cause worry. Fresh growth this spring will overcome it. It might worry you to see these brown edges, but if you start cutting on spring-flowering plants, you will likely lose flower buds that should open normally and on time. That would be a bad surprise. These survivors show that we got away pretty well, despite the temperatures below 10 degrees. That is largely because of the landscape plants being in full dormancy at the time. This is so different from the freeze that occurred last April, when many plants, notably hydrangeas, had broken dormancy, were starting to grow, and suffered mightily from temperatures that were merely in the low 20s. Covering the plants with bed sheets proved helpful and worth the effort in protecting tender foliage and buds those few nights.
That's all the time we have for today. You've been listening to Out in the Garden on the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Out in the Garden is available as a podcast by visiting our website at ncreadingservice.org. If you have comments or questions, give us a call. Our telephone number is 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.